Good morning. Morning. Happy Sunday. Happy Sunday. Geshe-la called in sick, so he asked me to substitute today. So if you could please join me in some prostrations. Okay, so if you take the white prayer book out, that's if you're sitting at the pew, it's at the end of the pew. Turn to the first base sheet. At the top, you see Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra. It says Kadamba Center Prayers. So let's chant that three times. Then the four measurables in English. Taya ta om ne mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta om ne mune maha munaye soha. Tayata om ne mune maha munaye soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sentientam jedevadam devegyudam Dempajuchi Dunya Danduk Nyagi Gyudan Dewarjuchi Dunya Me Dewa Dami Dewa Chuchi Nye Ring Chadan Ni Dan Dewe Tan Yom Lane And if you please turn the page to the first pink sheet. At the bottom you see two mantras. Let's chant Chenrezig's mantra eight times and then Green Tower's mantra seven times. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tadetu Tadetu Re Soha. Om Tadetu Tadetu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu 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 Re Soha. Okay, the children are free to go to their classes. Okay, so I thought we could start with a short guided meditation. So looks like many of you, there's quite a few people may not be familiar with meditation. No. So the most important thing is to try to keep your back feeling straight, you know, but in a comfortable position. And you can put your hands either on your knees or on your lap. Try to relax your jaw, your neck, your muscles, any tension in your body. Try to just relax those areas. And just sit and enjoy the experience of sitting. And try not to focus on anything specific. If a thought or emotion arises, whether it's good or bad, just label it as a thought or emotion and let it go. If you hear noises or movement around you, just label it as a noise or a movement and let it go. Now bring your focus to the self, the I. How do you see the I? How does the self appear to you? Is it your arm? Your legs, your heart. Is it your name? Is it the job or the career that you've chosen? So, in his teachings, Geshe-la just taught on what the mirror self is, or the self is. And he said that we need to stop superimposing attributes to the self or to the I, because they don't really define us. He said that what we are just merely labeled self, the merely labeled I. And it's merely labeled on the aggregates or the collection of our parts. And that's what everything is. It's all phenomena is the same. All it is an object and the label that someone puts on it. And that's all it is. So we're not really as solid as we believe we are, solid and as permanent as we think. So usually we don't think of ourselves like that. No, not, at least not, you know, all our waking hours, we may not think of ourselves that way, because it might be hard to function that way. We might think that, obviously, as I said, you know, just because we lose an arm or a leg or all our limbs, that doesn't mean that we don't exist. You know, there's no longer me or I or mine. Even if we got a new heart transplant, that doesn't mean that, you know, the I doesn't exist, the self doesn't exist, the one that's labeled, you know, Lamo does not exist because she has a new heart transplant. That's not true. Obviously, even, you know, just looking at me conventionally, you know, that I'm still there. Just this collection of parts that is labeled Lamo. So, you know, we're not just body, we're also mind. There's different levels of mind, gross mind, subtle mind, very subtle mind, and so the gross mind is one that is usually connected or associated with the gross body, you know, the muscles, the bones, the hair, and so forth. And then there's the subtle body, the subtle mind that we can get in touch with, you know, in dreams, and some tantric practitioners can get in touch with that through dream yoga. And then there's a subtle mind, and that's the mind that continues, that's been here from beginningless time and will continues. In the Buddhist view, it continues infinitely. So this and the nature of this mind is clear and knowing. And so by definition, it's that which is mere experience, and that is clear and knowing. Like, for example, a mirror, and it has a mind also has a quality called Buddha nature or Tathagata essence, and that's which is on the very, very subtle mind, and it's the cause for our future enlightenment. It's the future enlightenment of all sentient beings. But right now, for many of us, there are things that mar our essence, the Tathagata essence, and they are called fleeting stains. Fleeting mean that they're just temporary. So it's just like a dirty mirror, a mirror that has dirt on it. Just because there is dirt on the mirror, it's not the fault of the mirror that you can't see your reflection by picking up the mirror. And if there's it's also like a the sun on a cloudy day. Just because you can't see the sun, it's obscured by these heavy clouds in the sky, doesn't mean that the sun is not there. It's there, it's just that the clouds are hiding it. And that's what, you know, Buddha nature is like. So, then Geshe-la was talking, his topic was faith of conviction. And there are three types of faith. There's wishing faith, clarifying faith, and the faith of conviction. So wishing faith is like, a clarifying faith is like when you see the excellent qualities of the three jewels. It's It's like a water, a gem that purifies water. So you put this gem in murky water, and then it clears it all up. So the water is now clear. And so when you give rise to this clear mind, it clears the murkiness of your mind. And then you can see clearly the enlightened qualities of the three jewels. So that's the clarifying face. And then there's the wishing face. And so for that, you would think of Four Noble Truths. The truth of suffering, and then why there is suffering, the causes of suffering, and that there is a way to that suffering can cease, and then there's the certain methods to do so. And so what you have is with this wishing faith, you realize that yes, there is a way to for this suffering to cease, and with this effort, if I put in this effort, I can, and this can also happen, I can make all my suffering cease. And so you have this faith that you will definitely obtain this. And that's a wishing faith. And then the faith of conviction is a faith that is unshakable based on reason. And so, Alice, as I said in the first session, sometimes this faith of conviction is something that you have, you know, not just in things that are that you can see, but also in things that are very hidden. So there's three types of phenomena. There's obvious, hidden, and very hidden phenomena. So obvious phenomena are things that you can see with your physical senses, and hidden phenomena are things that you know through inference, such as if you see smoke at a mountain, then there's probably fire. And also, so that's hidden phenomena. And then there's very hidden phenomena. And that's phenomena that only is known through the direct experience of an enlightened being. Or by, through scriptures, such as the sutras. And so many times you need this faith of conviction to believe in this very hidden phenomena. And so when Lama Tsongkhapa mentions that the root of all happiness and goodness is, and he, when he says that, that developing this this certain conviction is karma, is on the faith of conviction of karma. And so karma in Sanskrit means action, but in Tibetan it means intention. So it's refers to the law of cause and effect. So if you do virtuous actions, those will result in happiness, and non-virtuous actions will result in suffering. So when you have so how do you develop this? Well, Geshe-la was saying that before the child can happen, there must be a mother. So the mother is the faith of conviction. So faith of conviction is like the mother, because without it, the child can't exist. So how do you develop this faith of conviction? Well, by studying the teachings, by really analyzing something, and through this experiential understanding, this deep understanding, comes this life-changing realization that suddenly appears, that you know this is true. And then that's what makes it unshakable, so that when someone else comes by and says something, or maybe you read something in a text, then you know this is not true, because you've had this experiential understanding. And so it's done through meditation, analytical meditation, and so forth. So once you have this experiential understanding, this faith of conviction that is the root of all temporary happiness and certain goodness and karma, then you know that every action counts. There is no such thing as an accident. Something happens because of a reason. So you take care in you know, making all your actions count. The action, not just the things that you do with your body, but the way you think, your attitude, and the way you speak, what you say. They all plant seeds and tendencies in your mind. And this happens, you know, throughout the day, just moments and moments. We're always planting seeds all the time. And many of the things, actions are neutral. And so there nothing happens there. But there are things that are positive and negative. Even those things seem to be very slight, you know. You might not even think that it counts, especially if no one's looking, you know. This angry look of jealousy, this feeling that rises up. Every single one of them counts. And then eventually it will ripen unless it's purified. If it's negative, it's purified. And so you can think that even the slight feeling that you have, maybe an emotion, that you may have when you see a holy image, you know, something might come up in your heart. Those actually do count. And even if you think that no one's looking, you may help someone to do something, then also that will definitely, be part of your steps towards your liberation and your, and will certainly ripen in the future at some point. But then, you know, you can't be all tense thinking, oh no, you know, every single moment counts. So you just have to relax and be at ease and be flexible with whatever situation you're in. So if the situation that you're in is due to some of the karma that you've already created in the past, in this life or in a previous life, so the karma has already ripened. There's nothing that you can do. Even Shakyamuni Buddha cannot stop it. There was this story where some beings, I don't know if they were Nagas, but anyway, some beings were being, they were fleeing because they knew they were being attacked. So they went to Shakyamuni Buddha and said, please help me, you know, there's people who are coming after us, they're going to kill us. So he hid some people in his bowl, his begging bowl, a child, and when they left, the child was dead. So the karma had ripened. Even Shakyamuni Buddha could not save this child, this being. So, but on the other hand, so when that happens, you can just accept whatever comes. Whatever comes. It just happens. The suffering, the good things, the bad things, or whatever. But then there are also times when you do have a choice. You can pause before you react to whatever comes, what is around you, experiences that happen when people, you know, say mean things to you or a bad situation comes up, have sudden, you know, expenses that happen that you hadn't planned for, or you want to help someone else, even though you can't afford it, so forth. Those things happen, and they happen because we are imperfect, we're not enlightened yet, and we're in an imperfect world. We're in samsara. So, as Geshe-la says, problems are going to happen. You know, things are not always going to go the way you've planned. You know, it's going to be a struggle. It's not going to be easy, but that doesn't mean you can't try. You know, you can't try to make your life more meaningful, make the world a better place, go after your dreams, and so forth, either mundane or super mundane. So you can just drop the idea that your child or you have to be perfect all the time, or in a certain situation, that they have to act perfectly, that they have to do this, you know, because it's just, we won't be perfect until we are enlightened. So don't let that worry you. Yeah. Let go of attachment of this way that we believe this thing should be going along. You know, even though like you've done everything right, you think you've done everything right, and then suddenly things fall apart, and you think, well, what is that? Well, you know, maybe it's like for example, you think your marriage is going well or your job is going well and you did everything you thought you could do, yeah, that you could possibly do, but you know, you're not clairvoyant, you don't know what other people are thinking, your boss, your spouse, whoever, and so things fall apart. So you shouldn't blame yourself. You know, you can regret whatever you did that maybe may have contributed to it, but then you have to keep going on. You have to keep moving. You can't let anything like that get you down and make and immobilize you. You can't let the situation that you're in immobilize you and make you feel hopeless. Anything around you, people around you, the situation around you, or the things that you're experiencing, natural disasters, whatever, you can't let that change the way all the virtuous thought that you can have. You know, you can make everything, even negative situations, into a positive situation, a growth, I guess people might call it, in a conventional sense, you know, an opportunity for growth, you know. So we can be at peace and at ease with the way things are, and what happens, happens. And why is that? Because this mind, this very subtle mind, is indestructible. Nothing can hurt it. No one can harm us. Absolutely no. The only one who can really harm us is ourselves. You know, our bodies will, when we pass away, we'll have another body. We'll become another being. And whether it's, you know, a Buddha or whatever, another human being, an animal, whatever, we will be, when we are in the bardo, we're just blown away helplessly like a leaf in the wind. And that wind is our karma. So the only one that can really harm us, as I said, are the actions that we have done in our lifetime. And otherwise, we always, always have a chance. There's nothing permanent. Say, even if we did something really bad or whatever, the karma built up so that we had to be reborn in the hell realms or hungry ghost realm or as an animal, there's always hope. We're never stuck there. It might take eons to get out, but you know, we can, there's always hope. It's not a permanent thing. So, in the Buddhist view, the way to liberate, to gain liberation or enlightenment is only through our own efforts. No one can purify us. We have to purify ourselves by doing actions. We can't just sit there. We've got to do something. And so there is things that we can do. So we can purify our negative karmas and accumulate merit. So I just wanted to read to you some things that are ways to accumulate merit and purify karma very easily. Very easily. Just millions of, you know. So there's great hope. And it's through the grace of our teachers that all these teachings have become available to us. So, and then of course through all the hard work of our lay practitioners and our sangha, you know, we've made this wonderful stupa, and in the stupa are thousands of the four Dharmakaya relics. The Dharmakaya relics are the highest form of relic. You know, there are relics that are like the clothes that Shakyamuni Buddha wore, or you know, little pearls. They look like pearls or bones of after his body was cremated. They were they manifested. Those are secondary relics. The Dharmakaya relics are higher than them. And so we have thousands and thousands of them in our stupa. And there are four mantras. The stainless pinnacle deity, secret relic, Zung of the exalted, completely pure stainless light, and the 100,000 ornaments of enlightenment. And just by circumambulating the stupa just one time, as Geshe-la says, you know, whether it's a human or an animal, insect, whatever, it has the power to purify all the negative karma that results in rebirth in one of the eight hot hells. So it's amazing. Truly amazing. Just to go one time around. And so then there are also ways of accumulating merit. And so Geshe always reminds me to tell everyone to spin the prayer wheels that are on the side as well. There's one right there. And you can also buy the little handheld prayer wheels. And those have mani mantras. There are prayer wheels that have other kinds of mantras, but these in the center have the Om Mani Padme Hum mantras. And so Zolpa Rinpoche says that if you have a mani prayer wheel in your house is the same as a potala, the pure land of the compassion Buddha. If you have a prayer wheel next to you when you die, the prayer wheel itself becomes a method to transfer your consciousness to a pure land. Simply thinking of a prayer wheel helps a dying person to shoot the consciousness up the central channel and out through the crown to reincarnate in the pure land of Amitabha or the compassion Buddha. Simply touching a prayer wheel brings great purification of negative karmas and obscurations. So if you turn a prayer wheel, you get the merit of having purifying, of turning or saying, reciting the same number of mantras that are in this prayer wheel. So if there are 100 million mantras, it's the same as if you just said 100 million mantras. So you go to a million mantra, mani mantra retreat, you know, you have to do that. Well, you just spin that and then you've done, you're done. So it's very easy. okay, so what are the benefits of the mantra itself, Om Mani Padme Hum? Well, you know, Geshe has explained about three different interpretations, translations of the syllables, but Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, one who recites 10 malas a day, or spins the same to equal 10 malas a day, if that person goes swimming, whether in a river, an ocean, or some other body of water, the water that touches that person's body gets blessed. It is said that up to 7 generations of that person's descendants won't get reborn in the lower realms. The reason for this is that due to the power of mantra, the body is blessed by the person reciting the mantra and visualizing their body in the form of the holy body of Chen Reisig. Therefore, the body becomes so powerful, so blessed, that this affects the consciousness up to 7 generations and has the effect that if one dies with a non-virtuous thought, one is not reborn in a lower realm. Okay, and then we prostrated to the altar earlier, so now the benefits of prostrating. And this is from the Lankavatara Sutra. Each time one prostrates, it creates the unbelievable merit to be born as a wheel-turning king, the number of times equal to the number of atoms of the earth covered by your body from the surface to where the earth ends. So in the teachings it says to the golden base, however, to wherever the earth finishes. It includes even the small parts of the body, such as hairs and nails. And of course, you know, if you're prostrating with your clothes on, it includes all the atoms of your clothes, too. I asked that for Geshe-la, because I thought maybe it was just your hands and your face and your feet. And he said, oh, no, it's your clothes, too. You get credit for that. So, and then Lama Zampa Rinpoche continues, this does not mean that one must be reborn as a wheel-turning king. Guru Shakyamuni Buddha is giving us an idea of how much merit we accumulate, because to be born even once as a wheel-turning king requires the accumulation of inconceivable merit. And then, of course, just seeing a picture of a holy image, a statue, a tanka, the stupa, collects unbelievable, numberless great merits. And this is mentioned in the Sutra of the Mudra, Developing the Power of Devotion, quoted by Shantideva in the Compendium of Trainings. So this includes those who have, so even if you look at the images with anger or ignorance or attachment, you still get the same merit. So that's why you can show your pets, dogs, animals, bearded dragons, whatever, guinea pigs. You know, you can circumambulate around the stupa, show them the image, you know, even if they may not be, you know, looking at the entire thing, maybe they can just see it, and they collect the merit. It's just certainly amazing. So, and even maybe there's someone who's not a Buddhist and does not care about Buddhism and does not even want to see a Buddha, and you show them that, you know, the tanka, you know, in spite, like, before they die, they'd have to collect, you know, it just clarifies a lot of merit. And that's the same with mantras, too. When you read about the practice of death and dying by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he says that even if the person who is dying does not care to hear mantras and does not want to listen to a mantra because maybe they're Christian or maybe they don't believe in mantra or maybe they're just in a bad mood, it's better to just go ahead and say the mantra because it will purify their mind, even if they're angry, just because by the power of the words, and just like it is through the power of the holy images. And so, but why is it happening? Why is it so? Well, it's because of the great compassion of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They know that many of us don't have the karma to see them, you know, in their nirmana kaya form. If they come, you know, we can't see them because they, even though they manifest for us, and they're all in front of us, you know, every one of them, just millions and billions, is, you know, like the grains of sand in the Pacific Ocean, we don't have the karma to see them. So what they do is that they manifest in these images so that we have the opportunity to create the merit that we want. And I'm going to be finishing early because I want you to be able to go out and spin the prayer wheel and be sure to walk around the stupa, you know, and even if you don't believe it, you know, there's no, you know, why not take the chance? Because if it's true, then it'll save you a few eons in the hell realms, you know, maybe, you know, what it's just, and it'll only take a second just to walk around, and you walk around clockwise, so, it's certainly worth doing, I would think. And then there's the benefit of rejoicing. So if you want to rejoice in the virtuous actions of someone who is at a higher level than you, then you receive half of their benefit, so of the merit that they have accumulated. So it's really a very easy idea to rejoice. And Geshe-la says you can do this lying in bed, like when you wake up in the morning and you don't want to do any practice. You can just lie there and rejoice. and of course, so especially rejoice in the works of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, because, you know, the Bodhisattvas give rise to bodhicitta, the awakening of mind, which is the aspiration to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. And then it arises spontaneously all the time, or whenever, you know, and because they want to do it for all sentient beings, they create skies of merit. So if you rejoice in the bodhisattva doing so, then you get half skies of merit, which is amazing. And Pabongka Rinpoche, who wrote Liberation in the Palm of a Hand, or at least all his teachings were summarized in that, I think by Chichan Rinpoche, he said that if you wanted to do the same thing, but without rejoicing, you wanted to accumulate the merit of a bodhisattva, half the skies of merit, without rejoicing, it would take 13,000 years. So that's, you could save yourself lots of time by rejoicing in bed. And another way to do it is by of accumulating merit. I'm trying to give you these easy ways to do it. Is by correctly devoting to your guru or your spiritual teacher. Now this is, you know, someone who you've observed, and you know, you believe that this person can give you the teachings that you really need for your liberation and your eventual enlightenment, maybe even one of many, and so you choose them as your guru or even your root guru. And when you do service to the guru correctly, you know, then you get just amazing merit. And so here, the in the Lam Rim Chimo by Lama Tsongkhapa, he says, I think there are eight, we become closer to enlightenment by following our guru's advice because the spiritual guide or the guru is the supreme field of merit. So, for example, when you see an image of Shakyamuni Buddha, you believe that it's really your root guru manifesting as the Shakyamuni Buddha. And that's why he's the supreme field of merit. Shakyamuni Buddha, in the Lam Rim, it says that he gives us, he helps us in times when, for example, if we were at this great feast, we're already there at this feast, and we're about ready to eat, and then he comes in with dessert, or he comes in with the main course. That's what Shakyamuni Buddha does. But the spiritual guide, the teacher, he comes up and he gives us some food when we're starving, or we're in the desert, the middle of the desert, and we're just, you know, so thirsty for water, he brings us pure water. That's what a guru does, compared to what Shakyamuni Buddha can do, will, you know, does for us. That's what is said in the Lam Rim. So serving the guru has greater meaning than making prostrations to all the Buddhas of the three times for 60 million eons. And that's from a quote from a tantric teaching called Ocean of Transcendental Wisdom that Lama Tsongkhapa quoted from. And he says also that we, by correct guru devotion, we please all the Buddhas. We're not harmed by Maras or evil friends. All our delusions and negative actions naturally cease. All our realizations of the paths increase. We will not fall into the lower realms. That's that part is was written in the Essence of the Earth Sutra. And we will effortlessly accomplish all our temporary and ultimate wishes. So when we see, when we, you know, if we decide, we decide to... So just because you come to a teaching doesn't mean that that person is your spiritual teacher. You really have to create that connection and think, this is the one. And then when you do that, that person that is the absolute guru. He's the Dharmakaya. He's the collective consciousness of all the Buddhas. And so you can... You know, think of it, have that attitude that all the Buddhas are manifested in my precious teacher. And the reason that you could think it so is because this is what Shakyamuni Buddha said. He said, Amogha Darshi, in degenerate times in the future, I will manifest in the forms of spiritual masters and abbots. In order to ripen the minds of sentient beings, I will also show birth, old age, sickness, and death. Don't worry that you will not meet me in the degenerate times. At that time, I shall manifest as the abbot or as the teacher. Now, when you say degenerate times, according to the Buddhist cosmology, 1,000 Buddhas are going to come to our world system during the Fortunate Eon, and Shakyamuni Buddha, I believe, is the fourth one. And of all the 1,000 Buddhas, all of them, 999 said, well, they're going to come when we have good times at the world system. Then people are easy to teach. But Shakyamuni Buddha volunteered with his great compassion. He said, no, I'm going to come when it's difficult, when it's a difficult time, when things are difficult. I'm going to come down and teach. And so that's when he came during degenerate times. He manifested. And so things are going to get worse. They're going to get very bad, you know, as time goes. Soon the teachings will no longer be complete. You know, the teachers will not have all of the qualities that we look for in a teacher. People wearing robes, monks and nuns will not have complete, you know, pure ethics. Things will be falling apart. Lives will get shorter and shorter. And then that's when Maitreya Buddha will come. And he's on the right there on the side of the Kalachakra statue on the left side. And he's sitting on a throne. He's sitting like that because to show that he is ready to come, you know, at any time to come and help us to manifest in our world, to save us when things get very degenerate. And then when that happens, then the lies will start getting longer and longer. And he'll go through the same same life events that are similar to Shakyamuni Buddha's life. So he's the fifth Buddha of the Fortunate Eon. Okay, so I wanted to end with another meditation. I wanted to meditate on the awakening mind. I'll start while you're getting into position, into your comfortable seat. And I'd like to read a verse from a sutra requested by Sagaramati. Just as a drop of water that falls into the great ocean will never disappear until the ocean itself runs dry, merit totally dedicated to enlightenment will never disappear until enlightenment is reached. And this is even if you don't have the awakening mind, the mind of bodhicitta. I'd like to read some verses from chapter 3 of Shantideva's Guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life. I rejoice in the awakening of the Buddhas and also in the spiritual levels of their children. And with gladness I rejoice in the ocean of virtue for developing an awakening mind that wishes all beings to be happy, as well as in the deeds that bring them benefit. With folded hands, I beseech the Buddhas of all directions to shine the lamp of Dharma for all bewildered in misery's gloom. With folded hands, I beseech the conquerors who wish to pass away to please remain for countless eons and not to leave the world in darkness. Thus, by the virtue collected through all that I have done, may the pain of every living creature be completely cleared away. May I be the doctor, the medicine, and may I be the nurse that all sick beings in the world until everyone is healed. May I be a protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, and a ship for all who wish to cross the water. May I be an island for those who seek one, and a lamp for those desiring light. May I be a bed for all who wish to rest, and a slave for all who want a slave. May I be a wishing jewel, a magic vase, powerful mantras, and great medicine. May I become a wish-fulfilling tree and a cow of plenty for the world. Just like space and the great elements such as earth, may I always support the lives of all the boundless creatures. And until they pass away from pain, may I also be the source of life for all the realms of varied beings that reach unto the ends of space. Today my life has borne fruit. Having well obtained this human existence, I've been born in the family of Buddha and now am one of Buddha's children. just like a blind man discovering a jewel in a heap of rubbish. Likewise, by some coincidence, an awakening mind has been born within me. It is the sweet, supreme ambrosia that overcomes the sovereignty of death. It is the inexhaustible treasure that eliminates all poverty in the world. It is the supreme medicine that quells the world's disease. It is the tree that shelters all beings, wandering and tired on the path of conditioned existence. It is the universal bridge that leads to freedom from unhappy states of birth. It is the dawning moon of the mind that dispels the torment of disturbing conceptions. It is the great sun that finally removes the misty ignorance of the world. It is the quintessential butter from the churning of the milk of Dharma. Okay, so I hope you now have some tools to purify negative karma and accumulate merit. And thank you very much for listening. So now what I'd like to do is read the prayer list. And then before we do the dedications, prayers for happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters, all the Tibetans have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. Lori Ford, Al Smith, Alice Hurt Summers, Ian Stewart, and Mojo the Cat. Job Search. Jim Kay, Roseanne Barona, James Zillig, Greg Weaver, Ashlyn Kloss, Pooja, Sarai, and Lindsay Piatti. Prayers for Health and Well-Being. Khyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Chökyi Lamo, Venerable Losang Tsering, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Barb and Roger Alexander, Jim Barnes, Roseanne Barona, Harvey Blom, Connie Brown, Carolyn Burns, Elizabeth Campanile, John Carroll, Florence Constant, Dimitri Diamandopoulos, Rita Dodrill, Emily, Dee Freeman and her daughter Lily, Mildred Gooch, Francis Hayashi, Leslie and Joan Inman, Katie, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Danny Love and family, R.M., Judy Martin, Rachel Cole Madison, Sean McGarity and family, Tom McGinnity, Sarah Miller, Monty, Jack Nottingham, Jay Pandya, Pierre Parenteau, Anna Papard and her many cousins throughout the Ukraine, Aunt Polly, Tom Pooks, Ronnie, Eileen Rubin and family, Dr. Albert Sanz, Jeannie Sherio, Richard, Rosemary Seast, Andre Smith, Michael Smith, Lobsang Toktim, Carol Vogel, Don and Greg Weaver and family, Dion Washington, Carmen the dog, Dorje and Kajo the pigs. If you have any names you'd like to add, would you please say them now? So if you please turn to the first pink sheet in the Bright Prayer Book, just read the dedication verses at the top, starting at the top. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good, all-powerful Chenreis of Tenzin Gyatso. Please remain until samsara ends. Savor of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as a bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Now let's chant seven green Tara's mantras for Geshe-la's long, healthy, happy life. And so he'll definitely come back next Sunday and teach, so you don't have to listen to me. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.